Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White. Joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how are you doing, sir?
Look, I'm as happy as I could be to be here, I think. You know, Jeff, it's like things are going well. I can't complain. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Nice. Yeah. And I'm excited about today's topic because, I think the notion of customer experience, it's on the tip of everybody's tongue. We hear a lot about it through the lens of B2C marketing for sure, but everybody in the manufacturing space understands that they can't ignore customer experience. It's not just something that is only for the cool kids over in the consumer space to play with. In fact, I would argue that they're not nearly as cool as they might think, and B2B can bring some of that over too. But so yeah, I'm kind of interested just to unpack what it means, how to think about it. I think today's guest is going to be a great one.
Yeah, no, let's dive right in. So joining us today is Dan Gingis. Dan is the Chief Experience Maker at Experience Maker. Welcome to the Cooler Ring, Dan.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to get down and dirty and B2B with you and why customer experience is the ultimate competitive differentiator.
Dan, it's wonderful to have you on the show. I know that you're an incredibly sought-after speaker on the topic, so I thank you for joining us today. It is really an honor to have you on the show.
My pleasure. This is what I live and breathe, so I'm always excited to talk about it.
Well, I guess first things first, what led you to live and breathe this? Why the focus on customer experience? What led you to that?
So I actually spent 20 years in corporate America, almost all of it in marketing. Only in one of my later jobs did I get into the customer experience space. And it was fascinating because I realized that all this work I had done in marketing I got my start in direct mail, but worked my way up through email and social media and web and mobile and SEO. And to me, none of it matters if you have word of mouth marketing. Because word of mouth is more powerful than any of those things. And it comes down to really a simple fact. It always sounds better when someone else is saying nice things about us than when we're saying nice things about ourselves. And so I realized that customer experience was the way to get there. And the best way to generate word of mouth marketing, sure, if you know how to create a viral video, please go ahead. But usually we can't do those on demand. And so the best way to get word of mouth is to provide an experience that's worth talking about.
But man, those early days of direct mail were pretty heady though, right?
They were fun. And I still have my it was basically an atlas that had maps of different areas of the country because we would identify by zip code who we wanted to target. And I actually remember for a while I was marketing sports paraphernalia. And so we had to get really good about, hey, in Chicago, Cubs fans and White Sox fans don't want to see the other's paraphernalia, right? So we've got to divide it along county lines and all this stuff. And all of it was manual at the time. And I actually think it was great preparation, though, for digital marketing, because although the channels changed, the concepts didn't.
The original channel conflict, trying to keep, two different baseball team fans from being upset with each other.
Exactly.
To be fair, Dan did warn us that he may try to turn this into a baseball podcast. And there it is. I mean, we're just a few minutes in.
I know. The Chiefs have won one game. That's where we are right now. That's where we're recording. It's 2-1.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I think that hooking on what Jeff was saying there a little bit, I find it fascinating. I think the direct mail side of things would absolutely inform your approach here. It's one of the there was a level of customer intimacy for marketers in direct mail that in some ways marketers didn't get to experience if they were, say, helping guide a television production or something like that. So that's not as surprising to me, I suppose, Dan, that you found your way to customer experience from that that background. It's interesting.
Well, and also what goes around comes around. So today, direct mail is somewhat becoming cool again because if you've been around any number of decades, you know that when we were younger, our mailbox was a lot fuller than it is today. And, today I always joke, by the time I go from my mailbox, which is at the end of my driveway, to my recycling bin, which is at the front of my driveway, I've basically just deposited everything in there, right? It's a few steps. I look at the mail and it's gone. And that actually does create opportunity for people because there isn't so much mail to sift through anymore. And so it is a little bit easier to stand out.
Yes. Look, I'm never going to have an opportunity to introduce this bit of advice on the show. So I'm going to do so right now for those listening. The one direct mail that you can send that has 100% open rate is a box. There's nobody on the planet that's going to get a box in the mail or via a courier and not open it. Yep. Just FYI. All right. Well, now that we've got the look, we're already delivering a great value. We're 5 minutes in. This is fantastic. I wonder though, Dan, you do have a framework for how you think about customer experience and how to go from, I guess, being a bit of an also-ran in a category to being somebody that is worth talking about. To drive that word of mouth. Talk to us about that. How do you think about that initiative and how do you get it started?
Sure. So I think it begins with this basic knowledge that in almost every industry, competing on price is a losing game. We don't want to get into that battle because it's a race to the bottom. And competing on product, and I'm going to say this carefully with manufacturers listening, competing on product is becoming more and more difficult because so much can be copied. And we think we have a product that's unique, and then next thing we know, someone else is doing something substantially similar. So when you take those two things out of the equation, the only thing left to compete on is experience. But the good news is that it is the one thing that your competitors can't copy. And so that's kind of the basis for it. And then the model is called WISE, and it is because I want more people to be wise to the power of customer experience. And the idea of WISE is creating customer experiences at scale, because whatever size business we have lots of different customers, and we are trying to make sure that each touch point that we have with them is memorable in some way. And so there's a lot to it, and we have to be able to scale it quickly. So the four elements of WISE are: the W is witty, the I is immersive, the S is shareable, and the E is extraordinary. And I'm happy to go through each of these quickly and kind of explain what they are. And then maybe we can talk a little bit about how we might apply them, you know, to your audience's business.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful. It'd just be nice to just get into each one of them and just understand and begin to imagine how that would come to life in the B2B context. So please.
Yeah. So the W is about being witty, and witty is not about being funny. It's actually just about having fun. And I believe that business can be fun and business transactions can be fun no matter what it is that we're selling. And frankly, most customers or clients want to have fun. Like, have you ever met anybody that doesn't want to smile, for example, right? Most people enjoy smiling. And if we can make them smile, we're having an impact on them. And so with witty, it's about looking at all of your communication points, whether they are digital, whether they're physical, online, in person. Every time we communicate with people, we have an opportunity to create an experience. So you could think about signage in a physical location. You could think about email signatures in a digital sense. You could think about your contracts and your invoices. I mean, when it's time to pay a bill, that's not a usual fun part of the experience, but what if we put a smile on people's face? So anytime we're communicating, it's an opportunity. Instruction manuals, you know, I could go on and on. If you're using words, basically, why not have some fun with it? Quick story from my book about ordering a TV stand from Target. And I am not a guy that likes to build furniture. Some people like that. Some people don't. I don't like it. And so I called my teenage son and I'm like, all right, man, look, I'll pay you, but I need your help. You know, it's probably going to take us 2 hours to do. It's going to suck. We'll put on some music, whatever. So we pull it all out of the box and I get the instruction manual out. And the very first sentence of the instruction manual says, "Don't sweat this. It's going to be way easier than you think." And that sentence completely changed my mindset. All of a sudden, I was in a positive mood and I was like, yeah, prove it to me. Let's go. And that thing took us about 25 minutes to build. And they were right. They delivered on it. It really was very easy. And so this is the power of language. And I don't think that we use it enough. We take it for granted too often when we're doing business. So that's a witty part.
Well, and so let's not go too far away from it before I ask a question about that, because I think one of the things that marketers, look, we're pretty good at thinking that we're clever, you know? So if you ask many marketers if they can, you know, imagine writing something like that at the start of the instruction manual, you know, they could get their head around that. And part of the reason they think they could get their head around that is they see that maybe they may be the one doing it, and they're fairly certain it would be clever if they're doing it. But they wonder, can we be witty at scale? So you talked about part of this is about being at scale. I wonder, have you seen experiences where people have provided some guidelines to across the organization for a little bit about how does this organization, how are we winning at scale? How does that come to life?
Yeah, I mean, so as with sort of anything marketing related, you know, obviously we want to have brand standards and we want to make sure that we're, you know, somewhat consistent in our communication. But it really is just about being willing to have a little bit of fun. And so often in business, it isn't. It's exactly the opposite of that. And so once we sort of teach our employees that it is okay to have a little bit of fun, then the creativity starts flowing. And you find that there are just lots of different opportunities, whether it is in traditional marketing or advertising, or it's in any other point where we engage with customers. You know, and so, because if you think about, say, the sales process of selling equipment, there's a lot of steps that happen. There's a lot of interactions with the customers. Now, they don't all have to be fun and games, but if there are a couple of points in those interactions that are surprising to people or memorable to people in some way, then we stand out. And that's when people start talking about us. That, and this is what we want, right? We want people talking about us. So I always suggest to people that before we worry about scale, let's just do it once. Let's just figure out one place that we can do it, and we'll get our customers' reaction. Because oftentimes the pushback that I'll get is, well, you know, customers don't want us to be funny, and they want us to, we're a very serious business. And this is where I come back to, it's not about being funny. It's not humor necessarily, but it is about showing the humanity behind your brand, that even though you're a big manufacturer, there's humans that work for you. There's real people behind the brand, and real people have hobbies and they have fun and they know how to smile, and we can transfer that to our customers. And so that's where I always suggest start someplace small. If you go to my website, for example, and you type in dangingus.com and then hit slash, just hit a bunch of buttons or a bunch of, you know, letters, so you know it's a bad URL, you're going to get to an error page, which with most companies says 404 error. Now, A, nobody knows what 404 means. I think it's a coding number of some sort, but it means nothing to a consumer or to a buyer. And secondly, there's an opportunity to create an experience. And so when you hit my error page, you will probably smile because I decided to just have fun with the error page. I had fun with my privacy policy and all these other pages that you don't expect anybody to have any fun with. But then when you hit that as a customer, you're like, wow, this is a different kind of company. This was unexpected. And this is, again, what gets people to start remembering it.
I think what's interesting here, and this notion of, you know, it doesn't have to be funny, but it still can be witty. It really comes down to defining what that means for your organization. I think this is really where brand archetypes come to life really well. You know, you can still be a ruler brand like Mercedes-Benz and be witty. You know, you may not be funny, but, you know, you can be clever and witty, and that can still work. And I think that's setting those guidelines for the entire organization. I like what you said about, you know, let's try it once and see what the response is. Obviously, that's a great way to test the waters and maybe then work it into that. But if you have those definitions of how we talk as a brand, how we go to market as a brand, you know, that archetype can provide some great guidance for organizations that maybe would be reticent to give this a go.
I hear what you're saying there, Jeff. And, you know, I think Dan is... highlights a really important point for listeners as well, is that in some ways, the more serious or the more, you know, buttoned down an organization or a category is, then the more a little bit of wit will stand out too.
For sure. 100%.
I don't want to I don't want to get all of this conversation done on the first of a four-letter acronym. So let's continue along to.
Sure. So being immersive is about creating experiences that people feel in their bones. And usually we do this by appealing to one of the five senses or appealing to people's emotions. And this is a great place to try this out is in your sales process, right? Because if you think about why we buy from the people that we buy from, usually it's because we like them, right? And usually we've created some connection with them that may or may not have anything to do with our product. And so when we're immersive, we are looking for ways to bring in multiple senses or to leverage different emotions that might be at play. And the reason we do this is because that's what memories are made of. So if you think about some of your best childhood memories, chances are you can remember either something that you were seeing, smelling, tasting, touching, or hearing, and you can probably remember how you felt during that moment. You were happy, sad, scared, you know, excited, whatever it was. And that's what forms our memories. So when we look at being immersive, it's about doing this intentionally, creating parts of our experience where we want people to feel something. So maybe it's about allowing people to, I'll tell you what, I just did a speech recently for a heavy equipment manufacturer, and I got to ride in a forklift, and I've never ridden in a forklift, right? But what do? Of course, I pull out my camera, I take a picture, their brand is right there on the forklift, and I'm telling everybody about it, right? And that's an immersive experience for me to even just be able to sit in the seat and view the world from the height of a forklift was pretty cool. And so those are the kinds of things we're talking about, is allowing the customer to be involved some way in the process or in the experience. It could also be, let's say somebody already placed an order for you and there's a waiting period, right? Because chances are you're not delivering this equipment next day like Amazon. You're probably taking some time to manufacture it. But what if you had some people taking videos of the manufacturing process and you were able to send it to your client and say, look, here's the forklift we're making for you. Like, this is your forklift. And there it is on the assembly line. That's really cool because it gets the customer in there with you, if not physically, at least emotionally. So there's lots of ways that we can be immersive. That's just a couple of examples.
I really like you're forcing me to imagine kind of how you design that process from the start, like how you go into it with intention, and this notion of how do you, like, I'm imagining being given the challenge to connect a core product benefit and how do you, or a service benefit or what have you, and how do you in some way find a way of connecting that to a sensory experience. And, you know, we stumbled upon one of these probably a year and a half ago now or so, we were doing some work with a plumbing valve manufacturer. And their plumbing valves use more brass than anyone else's. And so as a result, and so they're highest quality valves on the market, they would suggest. But how do you communicate that other than saying we use the more brass? Well, it turns out that because they use more brass, their valves are by far and away the heaviest in the category. So by directing to that sensory experience, hold one, pick it up, feel that difference. It reminds me of like a Mercedes car door versus a Japanese brand car door. Much heavier, and we associate heavy with quality. I mean, I don't know if you can get to that tight a connection between product benefit and sensory experience every time. But it seems to me to be a great place to get to if you could get there.
Absolutely. It's a great example. And no, you don't have to do it every time, but you start figuring out ways to do it and then they work and then you figure out more ways to do it. And so I think that's an excellent example. And my question would be, I don't know how big these valves are, but how do we get them in as many hands as possible? Because that might be a really good way to sell them. Because if that's if all I've got to do is do this and be like, yep, I can tell this is higher quality and I don't know a thing about plumbing valves. I think that's a super smart. I thought you were going to get into perhaps the color of it, if it's brass. I don't know if brass smells any different than other metals. We could certainly, if we went back to witty, we could play around with brass because it rhymes with some fun words. So like, there's lots of things we can do. We just gotta be creative.
Yeah, and you gotta be willing to try them and do them. Yeah, yeah. So the S and Y's.
Yeah, so that gets us into shareable. And this one's a little tougher for B2Bs, but absolutely not impossible. Shareable is really about leveraging this idea that, hold on, let me back up a second. One of the things we have to keep in mind in B2B is that we are not selling to a business. We are selling to a human that works at that business. And so that human is a consumer. Now, they're not wearing their consumer hat when they're buying for us. They're wearing their business hat. But they are a consumer in real life, which means they know what it feels like to order a product on Amazon and have it arrive same day. They know what it feels like to go out to a nice restaurant and have amazing, impeccable service to go along with the great food. They also know what bad experiences are like. And so what Shareable is about is it's finding this moment. Because every consumer has had this moment at some point. You all have had it too. You are in the middle of enjoying life. You're walking down the street and all of a sudden you reach into your pocket or your purse and you pull out your phone and you take a picture or a video because you want to capture the moment that's in front of you. Now, what happens next is usually that you share that image with somebody. And maybe it is with a million followers on social media, but maybe it is just with a friend, a family member, or a colleague. And if you think of the B2B manufacturing space, we don't need people sharing it with a million people. We just need them to tell one other person who could be a prospect for us. And it is unbelievable value, right? If every one of our customers, we get every one of our customers to tell one person about us, what does that do for the business? But in order to get them to do that, we have to design a moment intentionally that people are going to pull out their phone and capture. Because that is going to be one of the best ways for them to share is when we can share visually. And so again, this is done very purposefully, and the way that I suggest that companies think about this is if you could imagine, let's say 100 of your customers go on to Instagram and they make a post about you. What is it that you would like them to be saying? And what is it that you would like them to be showing? And once you come up with that, you can design an experience around it to ensure that that is what they're saying and that is what they're sharing. And so we have to have in our heads what we want it to be. I'm going to give you a consumer example here just because it's one of my favorites. But it you know, again, we can take any of these and apply it to our business. So there's one of my favorite brands is called Dippin' Dots, the ice cream of the future. You may know these things. They sell them at like amusement parks and stuff. And these little balls are stored at super sub-zero freezers. So they're like way colder than your freezer at home. And as a result, when you get your cup of Dippin' Dots and you take the first bite, it usually sticks to your tongue. Now, kids really like this. Adults, depending on where you grew up, especially if you grew up in a cold weather climate, you don't like anything sticking to your tongue because you got bad memories. And so this is sort of an aspect of the product that they can't control for. So they decided to lean into it with their marketing. And all they did was start posting on social media pictures of people with Dippin' Dots on their tongue. That's it. And everybody figured out that that was the moment. So henceforth, every time you go to get Dippin' Dots, you take that selfie with that first bite when it sticks to your tongue. And now people know to do that. They imagined the moment that they wanted people to take a picture of and share. And then they just sort of put it out there and gave them the hint to do it. And people figured it out. So in B2B, it's a little tougher, but I would say still you've got such interesting equipment that maybe it's, I'm just making this up, but maybe the moment is the first time you turn on the ignition. Like that's the moment we want to capture. Great. How do we get people to capture that moment? How do we get people to be thinking at that moment, oh my gosh, I got to record this. And then we get them to share it. So it's absolutely doable in this space. It, again, requires a little bit of creativity.
I think one of the interesting applications for that thinking would also be imagining how a B2B buyer shares an experience internally to help build internal consensus towards an eventual purchase decision.
100%.
So it's interesting to think about that. Okay, creating shareable moments. And I like how you're not getting too fussed about how it's shared. Back in the early days of social media, the channels for sharing was kind of the strategy, and then what got shared ended up being second sometimes. But yeah, it's an interesting thing for the mind to spin around on, is how do we create those shareable moments that are shareable internally? Of course, getting customers to talk to other customers is also a wonderful thing too.
Sure, sure. But that's a great point. And it reminds me of an experience I had when I worked for a B2B, and I was being solicited by, I think it was a software company. And the salesperson sent me a bottle of wine. So to your point, a box, which of course I had to open. But the bottle of wine had a combination lock at the top of it. So you couldn't open it unless you had the combo. And the note attached to it said, call me for the combo, right? Which was brilliant. Now, what did I do? I put the bottle of wine on my desk with the lock on it. And all of my colleagues would come around, they'd play with the lock to see if they could guess the combination, right? So I actually intentionally waited a while to call the guy because it became a conversation piece, exactly like you said, right? Mm. And so whether or not we end up buying for this guy, he made an impression because he was different. He stood out and he gave us something experiential, which means it was really immersive and shareable.
Mm. Yeah, we've always talked about those since the founding of Kula as an agency, as this notion of a social object, something that you create that is meant to be socialized with others. And I think, you know, your point there is the intentionality with which you create that item to be shared, so that it can be shared in the way that you want it to be, or at the very least giving the power to do so. Yeah.
Correct. Otherwise, we're just waiting around for people to talk about us, and we don't even know what they're going to say when they do, right? We want to be able to control this a little bit, because if we can, we can get people saying exactly what we want them to say in the places we want them to say it. So that brings us to extraordinary. And extraordinary is usually the part where people start to get a little worried because they think it's expensive, because it sounds expensive, but it really isn't. And the reason is that the vast majority of experiences that we have as either consumers or B2B buyers are ordinary. They're average. They're what millennials call meh. They're what Gen Z call mid. Every generation has a word for this, but those are not the types of experiences that people talk about with others. And so this is about looking at our customer journey and figuring out where are we ordinary, which is generally going to be in a lot of places. And then it's not about having to go from a incandescent light bulb to massive fireworks in the sky. Like, that's too big of a jump. It's really about taking a little step above to be just a little extra. And that's what extraordinary literally means, is better than ordinary. And so when we think of it that way, it becomes way more approachable. And there are tons of ways that we can do this. When I was in corporate America and I managed many, many teams over the years, all the folks that worked for me knew that there were basically only two answers you could never give me, because I did not accept these as answers. Now, answer number one is because we've always done it that way. That's a terrible answer. And then answer number two is because everyone else does it that way. And if you ever hear either of those answers, you can be assured that what you're doing is ordinary, right? It's not standing out in any way. And so the metaphor that I use here when I do keynotes is a longer story that I won't bore you with here, but it's basically the difference between a candle and a sparkler. And a candle is nice. It provides light. You know, on top of a slice of birthday cake, it's pleasant. But a sparkler is so much more than that. And a sparkler is engaging, and a sparkler is different, and it stands out, and it's worth taking a picture of. And yet it's not particularly more expensive. It's not more operationally complex because we light it the same way. It doesn't require technology or AI. It's just different from a candle, and a candle's ordinary. And so therefore the sparkler becomes extraordinary. And so regardless of, and I'm not suggesting people play with fire either, we can use it as a metaphor that we're just looking for that sparkler moment that we can have with customers where we're different from everybody else in a pleasantly surprising way.
I want to see if, I read something recently, it was an ad man out of the UK that was talking about how being differentiated from your competitors is in some ways oddly suggesting it was some ways overrated. And what was underrated was being distinctive. And I'm wondering if we're kind of knocking on the door of what you were saying with candles versus sparklers. Because kind of what he was saying there is, I think a lot of marketers when they hear you got to be different, well, they hear, oh my goodness, like, you know, we need to sell fundamentally different things, or we need to do so in fundamentally different ways. I don't have the power to do all of that, to make all of those decisions required for us to be so different from everybody else in the industry. But it feels to me to be a lighter lift to say, no, you can do the similar things. You're in a category for a reason. You're making the widget in a category that buys widget, but you can do so distinctively in a way that stands out versus, and I find it's an interesting distinction, I suppose.
Yeah. I'll give you two examples of where I think this comes into play. I didn't actually know this. Somebody came up to me after a speech and told me that in every Jeep that there is basically an Easter egg that you have to hunt for it's etched somewhere, or it's, you know, and I guess each one of their models has a different one. And it's just a little symbol and everybody knows it's there, but they don't know where it is. And so there's like a little bit of a scavenger hunt element to it. Super cool. An equipment manufacturer could do something like that. Or flip over to another industry that I've worked in is the boating industry. And I was talking to a bunch of manufacturers. So, you know, these are big, expensive items, six figures, just like we're talking about here. Usually they are using wood more often. And so I said, well, you know, if you're building this customized boat for someone and you're using all of this wood, certainly you've got a couple of scraps at the end of it, right? And they said, yeah, of course. And I said, why don't you make the customer a customized keychain so that when they go to turn on their boat every time, they've got this keychain there that makes them smile and they remember you every time they turn on the boat. And how much is that keychain going to cost? You're using a scrap piece of wood from the same boat, but you're etching their initials in it or whatever you're doing. It's this tiny little thing that is going to make an impact every single time they take out their boat. They're going to remember you. And I think what you will have, crazy enough, is I think you will have people taking pictures, not of their boat, but of the dang keychain, right? Because it's the thing, that's the distinctive piece. That's the thing that they didn't expect. And it didn't have to be expensive or complicated in any way. It's just being, I think distinctive is a great word. There's a friend of mine who is also a customer experience speaker who uses that word, which is why I don't use it, because you need to be distinctive from the distinctive guy.
Yeah, man.
Really, what you're talking about here is just actually trying to have creative ideas that you can execute in a relatively inexpensive way that cause people to talk about you.
Yeah, that's 100%. And the problem in most corporate America is that we don't do anything simply. Like, everything's complicated. And so even with customer experience, part of the reason I went down this path with Wise is that when I was in corporate America and I worked for big Fortune 200 companies, customer experience was this massive multi-year, multi-million dollar transformational project, which basically meant nothing happened. Or it was being prioritized against other massive multi-year, multi-million dollar projects. And I say, forget about all of that. Just focus on the simple stuff that we can control. And what you start to realize is that in almost every business relationship, there are thousands of opportunities to change something up. And we don't have to change the entire customer journey all at once. We can just find these little opportunities. And what I definitely find is that little experiences, it is the little things, positive and negative, it is the little things that people remember about their experience, right? And it's usually not the big things. It's the little things that stand out.
And I have to imagine that once you get in the habit of creating some wise experiences, you get better at spotting other opportunities to create more of them. It's a great reason to just simply get started and not make it a multi $100 million initiative. Look, Dan, this has been a fantastic conversation. I really thank you for bringing your experience to the show today. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure as well. It's as I mentioned at the top, it's always fun for me to talk about this stuff. And I've been fortunate enough to work across so many different industries, B2C and B2B. And I do find that almost every company is facing the same challenges. And this is one of the ways out of those challenges. It is being different in a way that isn't copyable, but also doesn't break the bank. So I encourage everybody to just try something. Just try it somewhere in your customer journey. When you start to see positive responses, you're going to want to do more.
Wonderful. Thanks, Dan.